Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jason Kipa. With me is Gabe Yanez. We're diving into a bunch of stuff today. We were just talking off recording and we were discussing about a recent article that came up. But before we get to the MSNBC article about how if you are encouraged to go do fitness and if you're fit, somehow you're far right. I don't know about that. I want to talk about, I just got back from a trip. And dude, one of the things that stood out to me the most, there's a bunch of takeaways, but one of the things that stood out to me the most is how in particular, I was in, I was in Rome or I was somewhere. And every statue of whether female or male, dude, people were jacked. I mean, in particular, the guys, you know, they're like basically naked. Most of the time they are naked, which is kind of whatever, but they're like minimal clothing, but they're jacked. And it was just a really interesting perspective that these things, hundreds, thousands of years old in some cases, and yet every single one of them, the guys who are being celebrated and the people who are being celebrated across this run looked super fit. Anyways, it was eye-opening. It was interesting because it was just one after another, after another, after another. There was no exceptions to it.
Back then, do you think that everyone was generally a lot more jacked, or was that just kind of like the aspirational, like people that they were putting up on statues?
I mean, I'm sure there's some type of historian that's probably going to hear this and be like, dude, you actually are, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you, but what I can tell you is that in general, I just got back. I was in Europe for a month. In general, I'd say, I mean, there was a bunch of stuff I want to talk about, but in general, there's two things that stood out to me. Number one is that many people in Europe, for the most part, obesity just wasn't a thing from my experience. Many of the places I went to, people were walking. You know, we averaged probably 10 miles a day walking, especially when we were in the cities. We walked a lot. And I think that people, they weren't obese because they were walking, but they also weren't like jacked from my experience this trip. Back in the day, I imagine people were pretty jacked because they had to lift, they had to run, they had to train, and they had to survive. And I think that survival, especially like we were in Rome with like the gladiator times, I'm sure that was like aspirational in some way. So those are my two takeaways, though, that the obesity seemed much less compared to the United States. But there wasn't as many people who like stood out as being super fit or super jacked. I mean, I had quite a few people that gave me some interesting looks actually while I was there.
Well, yeah, you stick out like a sore thumb in most places.
You know what I got? I got the most of is, hey, are you a boxer? That's what I got. I got boxer or wrestler a lot for some reason.
It's the ears.
It might be the ears. My ears are starting to get kind of bad.
It's definitely the ears. Yeah, I mean, I remember when we went to Europe last year, we weren't there for a full month. We did a quicker trip. But one of the interesting things, I forget what city this was in, it was in Portugal. The side like carts that sold like food for tourists had like fresh fruit. Yeah. Like there were like fruit carts. And that's like what people snacked on as they were like, you know, spending the day out. It wasn't like, you know, hot dogs and, you know, all sorts of, you know, some of the American snacks you see. So it's interesting too, how the food culture there is different and how that might, you know, impact what health looks like and what the average person looks like. I do know, just because I had seen a stat recently, I know the UK is starting to creep up close to the type of like overweight and obesity levels that we have in the US. But I think for the most part, we're still winning in most of those categories, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it just has to do with the sedentary component and the type of food. You know, so what I realized while I was there, I was in Sicily for like 10 days. And even they realized like they have people that come there with that are gluten intolerant, or in some places I don't want to blow this out of proportion, but she said even in some cases, even people with celiac disease could have the wheat that they provide in Europe, in Italy in particular, because it hasn't had the genetic modifications you see as much in the United States, which I found to be interesting that she, the woman that was teaching a cooking class, was like, hey, even if you have a gluten intolerance in general, people are fine with this type of wheat because it's like super fresh and small bushels on acreage, things like that. It hasn't been modified.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I wonder how much truth there is to that actually, because I do think the gluten thing is interesting. Because the gluten thing, I remember watching a funny video a little while back where there was like, it was one of those videos where they go interview people on the street with random questions. And they're asking people like what gluten is. And like, no one knows. Like no one actually knows what gluten is. They just know that it's this thing that like equates with unhealthy. Like gluten-free for a while became a buzzword, right? Like, oh, I'm gluten-free. But it's actually a very small percentage of people that have actual celiac. Now, granted, there are a lot more people that just don't do really well with at least the gluten here. And also, like, if you're eating a ton of gluten, chances are you're probably eating a lot of processed foods, and that's probably what makes you feel crappy. It's not just the gluten, it's the fact that gluten is in, breads and all this crap that maybe you shouldn't be having too much of. But it is interesting because then I wonder how much of it just gets in people's head, right? Like, oh, like gluten doesn't make me feel good. I went to Europe and it's so different. I feel so much better. Like, I wonder how much of it, because, we
Or was
can
it
make
other factors,
ourselves,
right? Was it the
right?
fact that you were moving more, you were whatever?
Yeah. Dude, we walked so much when we were out there just because you want to see everything. And the cities, the big cities, tend to be super walkable. So you end up walking a lot. And that's a thing
I'm
I
gonna pull
posted
it up
this
on my fitness app.
posted this on Threads the other day. Which, by the way, people should follow me on Threads. I'm trying to be more better about putting
Shout out to Gabe Yanez
content
on
on
Threads.
there.
Let's go.
Dude, it's so funny how it's basically Twitter, and
Oh, 100% is Twitter.
we could have always been posting on Twitter. And for some reason, the fact that there's this new platform that just makes it super easy to share, like as a story or as a post, like that was the thing to like get me to like put more of this stuff out there. Anyway, but that aside, what I posted the other day is, people really underestimate, no, overestimate how much they get out of like going through the motions at the gym when they do a quote unquote workout, but underestimate how valuable it is to just move all day, like get 10 to 12,000 steps.
Dude.
People are paying for a gym membership, they're going to the gym, and if you're not, going to a gym like ours at NC Fit, where a coach is holding you accountable, you're doing programming that actually gets you to, hit a relatively high intensity every day. You could just be going and going through the motions. You're going on some machines, you're walking on the elliptical, or maybe you are still doing CrossFit type programming, but you're doing it on your own in your garage. And if you end up going through the motions, you could be spending an hour at the gym. But if you're not putting the right effort in, you're not really getting as much of an impact as you might think. And then if you're spending the rest of the day sitting down, sitting in a car, sitting in an office, and then sitting at home, you could potentially be get a lot more benefit getting a lot more walking in than you are in this hour you're spending, in the gym going through the motions and checking your phone between each set. But it's interesting, right? Like this going to the gym thing just becomes something else that people check off the box instead of actually realizing, like, okay, how do I get the most of this hour that I'm spending in the gym?
Dude, so I'll give you an example. So today it's Sunday. I got back from Europe, hit up some great classes at our gym yesterday and jujitsu. This morning I was at jujitsu, and while I was there, I was thinking about this idea, and I was training when I was training the kids, and I thought about this idea of basically, from an adaptation perspective. I was having a conversation, actually, it wasn't with the kids. I was at the jujitsu gym, and we were talking about fitness in general. If you think about it at its like most basic level, it is providing stimulus on your body so your body freaks out and creates adaptation. Like at its most simplistic level, it's stressing your body so it wants to adapt so it doesn't make it as hard the next time. And you could think about that through hot and cold exposure. You could think about that through fitness. You could, because this guy came up to me, he's like, "Hey man, I saw a video of you lifting rocks." I was like, "Yeah, I was lifting rocks because I took external load, heavy load, and I wanted to stress my body, and I didn't have access to weights, and so that's what I used." And so I think back to this whole conversation you're having, if you're going to the gym and you're not really stressing your body to those levels that will create adaptation, like that's not the end of the world, but there could be a better way for you to hit the gym. However, just movement in general is super beneficial. So I'm looking, this is just like a snapshot of their 11 miles, 10 miles. I'm just pulling this up on my phone right here in front of you. This one was a 12.7 9 miles, right? Because the kids and I they're at a great age where we walk, we go do something, we walk, we go do something. And so when we're in the big cities, there was a lot of action. So get your steps in.
Does that give you how many steps on those days? I'm just curious because I've never tracked like actual mile distance, but does it tell you?
Yeah. So if anybody's watching this on video and is like, "Bro, that guy didn't even finish his ring," it's because for some reason my ring is such like the most difficult one. This one, 17,000
For
steps.
some reason,
Oh, look at this
it's because
one.
it knows you're Jason Kalipa.
27,000 steps on that one. Then the next day, 17,000. The next day, 19,000. The next day, 18,000, 15,000, 10,000. And, you know,
that's pretty impressive. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. And obviously, that's not sustainable unless you're spending all day walking. But I think 10 to 12,000 steps a day is like a very doable goal that people should have. That was actually in Kelly's book.
Yeah.
And talking about movement. And it's just like, now I feel like everyone has a smart watch or something, or even their phone can tell them how many steps. And it's a really good goal to look at, especially if you like feel like you're like plateauing with weight loss and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you feel like, hey, where I'm going to the gym, but like take a step back and like, okay, but how active are you being? Because if you are going to the gym, great. But again, if you're spending the rest of the day doing absolutely nothing, are you really like moving as much as you should be moving?
Dude. So I got to tell you a story. It's kind of funny. I don't know if I told you this. So we're in London. So we fly into London. And from there, I went and did some work at a gym in Newcastle. And so we fly into London and, you know, Ava's at an age where she really, we have to regulate, but she wants to work out every day. It's really important to her. And, you know, obviously extremes of anything are never good, but in this particular case, I'll take it. So there's a gym attached to our hotel. And so I take her in there and the minimum age, this is something that I think is worth noting. The minimal age for this gym was 16. And I think that maybe if you're a kid by themselves, I understand why they have certain age groups, but I don't know. What do you think? I mean, is it weird that a gym has the age group of 16? I think that probably makes sense.
Well, I mean, I think it's probably a liability thing, right? Like they probably just have to put that sign up because, you know, kids are kids. They're going to go in there. They're going to fool around. But I think the thing is like, and I told you this before, different context, but dude, Ava and Caden are like the exception. Like those kids are very, very different. They're very aware of a gym. They're very aware of like proper movement, what equipment to use, what not to use, how to use it. They'll go in there on their own probably and be a better user of that gym than the average person and know a lot more about how to get a good work at it than the average person. I think most kids are going in there and they're seeing, you know, oh, it's a jungle gym, it's toys, and they can get in trouble.
So I go up to the front desk and I have Ava there, and I had found out earlier that you had to be 16. And so I tell the guy she's 16. And so I tell him she's 16, and she, I mean, whatever, dude, like she, so we go to a functional training, like CrossFit area, and the guy, the front desk is maybe 40 feet from us. And I'm warming her up. We're using the assault bike and whatever. And I had just lied to this guy. I felt bad. And turns out later on that day, he's like, hey man, I know you're Jason Klepa. And like, I imagine you could just look it up and know that she's not 16. It doesn't matter. So I go and I grab some kettlebells and I bring them over to Ava, and the guy at the front desk starts looking at me and I'm like, okay, I'm like whatever. And sure enough, Ava starts swinging and then does a workout, and then Ava leaves and he comes up to me. He's like, dude, I saw you bring those kettlebells over to your daughter. And I like, I had no idea. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I was going to come over there and come tell you like, hey man, that's really heavy. Like you shouldn't be doing that. Then I watched her swing it. And I was like, and I turned back around. I walked back to my front desk. It was just a cool moment to know like, dude, young girls, women, they could crush weights. And it was unexpected for this guy to see someone move it that well. And I don't know, just, it was just kind of like a proud moment where I'm like, dude, the kids get after it, but they could, people are capable of more than what most people think they are if they've been trained accordingly. So that's my, that's my London story.
Especially young girls and women, right? Like
100%.
It's one of the, like you said, they can lift weight. They should lift weight.
Yeah.
Like they absolutely should, regardless of what your goals are. Like, and I know that maybe our audience, like they know this, but like, you know, the whole thing of like, well, I don't want to get bulky. And it's like, dude, trust me, you're not going to fucking get bulky.
Dude,
like,
I saw,
you got to put
a
lot of work in and eat a lot of very specific food. Like I'm trying to get bulky and I try my hardest to get bulky. Like you're not going to go in there, lift some weights and like look like Annie Thorstetter, I promise.
Dude, I don't know where I saw it. I don't know if you saw this online. Some guy's like, hey, women are afraid of, or women think they're going to get big and bulky picking up a dumbbell, but yet they'll carry a baby and a bag of groceries around for like 2 hours, something like that. And I was like, whoa. I was like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you gotta, you know, it's, I told you this before, but like the guy I don't know if I had mentioned this on the podcast, but we had a partner of ours, and this gentleman reached out to us and said that we need to remove any weights that were over like 35 pounds because they were dangerous. I just think people are misguided when it comes to loading. I think that they have a false reality of it's just what their reality is and what is necessary in real life is just convoluted. Like, you're going to say you can't go into the gym and lift over 35 pounds, yet you're responsible in your daily life to go perform. You got to go pick up kids. You got to go pick up stuff. Dude, that might weigh more than 35 pounds. What are you saying? You never want to have the capability of doing that? Just blows my mind how someone can believe that lifting a weight over 35 pounds is dangerous. If you're taught how to do it effectively, you should be doing that regularly.
Regularly, man. And it just makes you a more capable human. So Ariel went to go run some errands because I was going to record this podcast. So she's like, all right, perfect. I'm going to go do some stuff. So she's with our son, our 7-month son. She went to Home Depot and we need salt for the well house because we're on well water and it's hard water. So you need this like salt that softens the water.
Yeah.
These are 40-pound bags.
Yep. And yep.
There's no part of me that is like, well, no, I have to do that. Like, I could do it tomorrow, but the fact that she's going out and she's like, no, I have no problem doing it. Like, that to me is awesome, right? Like, the fact that like she's going to have no problem loading these 40-pound bags into the cart, taking it out to the car, and she's going to be holding, managing our 7-month-old son. Like, that's the reason that we train. That's the reason that she takes fitness so seriously, because yes, I could go do that tomorrow, but I don't have to be the one that goes to do that. Like, she's happy to do it and she can, which is amazing.
Dude, if I can give some advice to dads listening to this podcast, I would say that at an early age, demonstrate, especially to your girls, that lifting weights is not a bad thing. I think that that has single-handedly been one of the most impactful things for Ava, because she sees now, she's old enough where she sees all this stuff online. And the online is all about, you know, booty pump and whatever else is going on, right? But because she knows from a young age, she's been lifting weights and it's been effective for her, she could block out that noise. But if you had never had that exposure and you had all this noise telling you're going to get big, you're going to get bulk, you're going to do this, it'd be much harder to deal with. So start them young, expose them to light loads, and then build it up, letting them know that it's cool to be strong. Strength is never a weakness. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, just exposing them to the fact that like working out in the gym is like, we do it every day. Like, we eat dinner every day, we eat breakfast every day, we also go to the gym every day. And Shay's now at an age where, because he used to just nap, but now he's like awake and we got a swing that we actually hook up to the rig.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah. He's on a swing on the rig while we're just working out and he's watching us, and I'm sure he's going to be out there messing around in no time, but it's never too early to define like what normal is, right? Like, what are the foods that we usually eat? Something that I'm working on, but I think is also important in this time, is like also defining like what's normal in terms of how much time you're staring at a screen, right? Like, all these things, they're absorbing. And I think that, you know, to make sure that like you're setting the example of what normal is, so that they don't think that like what the average person, because for the average person, the gym's intimidating. You probably don't eat healthy all the time. Like, it's okay to be on your screen all the time. But because they spend most of the time with us, like, we can start defining what like normal is first, so that it never gets to the point where hopefully we need to have these hard and fast rules about, well, you don't eat those things, you have to move every day. Hopefully it just becomes a thing where it's like, yeah, like, we're all going to the gym, right? We're all going to move. We're all going to eat dinner together. And it's what mom cooked. Like, it's all good.
Yeah. I put up a thread, make sure you go check out the thread. And I didn't think this one was controversial, but there was one guy or a couple of guys that thought it was. It's okay for your kids to be bored. They don't need an iPad at every meal. When we were kids, we didn't have constant stimulation. We had to create it by thinking, playing, talking, et cetera. Like, basically, you know, if your kids have to have an iPad every meal, I just, they don't need it. It definitely, dude, trust me, bro. There is a time and a place for technology and it makes your life a whole lot easier, especially when kids are going through some tough ages. 100%. I'm acknowledging that, but it's not every meal. It's not every time. So,
dude, the iPad and the kids is a very polarizing subject, I've come to learn.
I don't even know how it's that polarizing. What I'm saying is, bro, there's a time and a place. You should definitely use it. It's a tool. It's a tool in your tool chest. And dude, there's times where I've been on planes and my kids are freaking out. I just throw an iPad in front of them and I just take a deep breath. And that's great. There's other times that we got to pick your battles where, you know, you're sitting down for 6 p.m. dinner. And I mean, for us, it's not even a thing. So I don't want to share that I have that pressure, because for us, it's just been a, anyways.
But it's because it's always what you've done, right?
Like, yeah, it's just normal.
I think that it's one of those things where I think that using technology as a tool when other things just aren't working, I think that makes sense. But it also 100%. Can't be the thing, like the easiest lever that you pull every time. And again, like, I get that, you know, parents out there, you know, circumstances, like a lot of kids, like super busy, whatever. And I also feel like, you know, I'm 7 months into this, like I'm not one to give advice, but what we're trying to do is just like, yeah, these things help. Like, dude, Miss Rachel's on our TV often. That being said, like, we always try first, take him outside, have him look at the chickens, like distract him with something when he, like, you know, is freaking out. But we do know that if we put something on the TV, it calms him down. And that's nice when we need it.
100%.
Do you know Miss Rachel?
I no, dude. My kids are old, man.
Dude, I haven't met a parent that doesn't know. Miss Rachel's insane.
I don't know who Miss Rachel is, but
dude. All right. So really quick on Miss Rachel. She's a preschool teacher, started a YouTube channel because her son needed speech therapy help. So she started making these videos where she like enunciates all the sounds very well. And they're like, you know, they cut to a different song and stuff very quick because kids have very short attention spans. And she is like, it's impossible for you to meet a parent that has, I would say, a kid two and under that doesn't know who this lady is. And it's insane because she's built such a huge YouTube following, YouTube channel, a very successful YouTube channel off of just videos where it's like literally, it's either just her in her living room or her in a green screen. Like, it's nothing super elaborate, but she does such a good job. And dude, kids love her. Actually, someone posted this the other day. I think it was Pat Barber. Pat Barber posted on Instagram the other day. He was commentating. There was this article about this young girl who speaks with an American accent, even though she's British, because of Miss Rachel, because of watching Miss Rachel videos. Like,
no way.
She had learned to speak through the video more than so through, like, you know, her parents and people around her, that she actually has an American accent and not a British accent, even though she's from the UK. So that this article was kind of going around, and the commentary was that this is concerning because kids shouldn't be learning exclusively or more from a video than from their parents. Anyway, we don't need to get into all that, but she's a big deal. Like, she's a big, big deal.
All right. Well, I'm not going to look up Miss Rachel because I,
you don't
point,
need to,
I don't need to, but I will talk to you about something. I think this was cool. Have you ever scuba dived before?
No, snorkeled, but I haven't scuba dived.
Bro. So I went scuba diving for the first time. I've never scuba dived in my life, and I've never had a desire to be honest, but Caden really wants.
Do they have like wetsuits that fit you?
Oh, dude, I was on the extra, 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 extra large size. But dude, so Caden really wants to scuba dive, and he, you know, we've been exposing him to different water things for a while. So he's very comfortable in the water, whatever. And so you have to be 10 years old to get your scuba license. At this place, I don't know. I told him when he was 10, whatever, but I put his actual appropriate date on the contract. So maybe they could have figured out, doesn't matter. He's 9. So dude, if you have not scuba dived, it was an amazing experience. It was incredible. The guys we went with were super awesome. But bro, it gets you a little uncomfortable, man. Like, it is not normal to breathe underwater. And it took me a moment. I just wanted to kind of raise my hand and say shout out to all the scuba divers out there. It took me a moment was what I wanted to say.
Oh, in general, like, cool experience?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, dude, it was incredible. But so it's just while we're talking about it, I'll tell you how it works. So you get all your gear on, and basically what they do is they hold you onto this buoy. You put your head in the water and you learn how to breathe through the regulator, right? Now, unlike traditionally, you can't breathe in the water. So that's the awkward part. Breathing out is easy. It's the breathing in that's very uncomfortable. So you start off, you hold on to this buoy, you put your head under the water, and you start breathing. So Caden does it. He looks good. I'm like, well, fuck it. All right. So I do it. I'm like, this is weird. I get, I, I get back up. I take out the regular. I look at the guy. I'm like, hey, man, like, I'm not, I was like, I'm not freaking out, but this is weird. And he's like, no, you'll be fine. So the next step is you put in your regulator and they take you down to a rock. And at that point, you have a weighted belt on. They have two divers. There's two of us and we had a private session. So I want to make sure we kept it like really safe for Caden. So it was two divers to two of us. One guy's on the surface, one guy's at the bottom. They did an excellent job. Made me feel safe the entire time. And he says, okay, you're going to go down and you'll go first. You're going to go down to this rock. You're going to hold on to the rock and get comfortable breathing. And we're going to basically balance out your vest that has air in it with your belt. And then you'll just stay on there. So I go down and maybe you're maybe in 5 feet of water. Like you're not in a lot of water. I could stand. No, it was like 4 feet of water because I could stand up. So I go down, I grab on this rock, I start breathing. And dude, I start freaking out. Like I came up to the surface, I put on my regular and I'm like, dude, like I told the guy, I'm like, I'm not comfortable right now. Like this feels really foreign to me. And meanwhile, Caden's doing it and he makes it look like a piece of cake. And so I'm like, all right. Anyways, the long story short, it was a really good lesson with scuba diving to approach it with great coaching that make you feel comfortable and give it a legitimate shot. So this is like the takeaways from the story are I get down to the rock. I start freaking out a little bit. I come up, I tell the guy, I'm like, hey man, I really don't feel comfortable. And I even, like I told you, like I told him, like, I'm not going to start crying and freak out, but I just don't feel comfortable. This is very awkward for me. He goes, look, man, just chill for a minute, start swimming on the top of the water with the regulator in. And as you feel more and more comfortable, you can go down deeper and deeper and deeper. And because of his coaching, because of his comfort, because of him not making me feel like an idiot or whatever, I just did exactly what he said. That session went from me feeling uncomfortable to me having one of the best experiences in my entire life. We went down like 30 feet, 25 feet, and Kate and I had the time of our lives. And it was an incredible experience. But I wouldn't have been able to accomplish that had I not had the right instruction and this desire to kind of get a little bit uncomfortable. So for anybody who's thinking about doing scuba diving, I highly, highly recommend it, but find the right instructors.
Good lesson, right? To you can never, because I think that sometimes it can be frustrating when you feel like people that should get something aren't getting something. And, you know, even body language, tone, all that stuff like really impacts people, especially when they're not comfortable doing this thing. And I think that, you know, a good coach can take a step back and be like, hey, even though it looks like, why aren't you getting this yet? You know, being able to meet them where they're at, truly meet them where they're at. Because sometimes, you know, especially for adults learning something new, it's much more of like just a comfort thing. Like they'll get it given the right time. I remember when I had to learn, when I was learning to ski, it was kind of similar because this was just 2 years ago. And there was also the added pressure. So my wife now, Ariel, this was the second time I was meeting her parents, and her dad is the CFO of a ski mount and a ski instructor. Like they're a big ski family. And he's like the guy at the mountain where we're going to go ski. I've never been on skis in my life. Second time meeting, you know, my now wife, but like, you know, at the time, like girlfriend's parents. And, you know, I'm trying to like not look like a doofus. And it's tough, man. Like skiing is one of those things that for anyone that's tried to learn as an adult, like you have to be fearless to be able to be good at it. Similar to trying to learn how to swim as an adult. And the kids around you are doing fine. The kids around here, they're like, okay, this is how you turn. And they turn. Then I try and do it and I can't turn. And it is so crazy, so frustrating. And I don't exactly remember what my experience was with the instructor I had. I'm sure he was very patient, very understanding, but it's important to be that way. Dude, especially when the pressure's on to like not look like a dingus, which I guess everything worked out. I got his permission to marry his daughter, so I think we're all good. But
dude, you made it happen. But I mean, I just think like for me, I almost missed out on one of the best experiences of my life, scuba diving with Caden for the first time, because I wouldn't say it was fearful. It's just if I hadn't have had the right experience, I might have missed out on that. So like it just is a testament to good coaching, good experiences. And it's also just one of those things like for anybody who hasn't, you know, if you want to be a world-class coach, you also need to go experience new things and be a student. And this was an 100% example of me being a student. And yeah, I was kind of forced upon it because Caden really wanted to go do it, but it turned out to be an incredible experience. And I just think you got to get past some of those fears. Like if you've been kind of thinking about doing something, if your kids want to go do something, you've been on the fringe of doing it, just go do it. Worst case scenario, you go try it and it's not for you, you know? But now, I mean, him and I want to go get him, as soon as he turns 10, I want to get certified. And I want to be those people who go scuba dive anywhere in the world, like within reason. Like I think it was just such a cool moment for him and I to be underwater doing that. And I wouldn't have experienced that had I not wanted to get a little bit uncomfortable. So get a little uncomfortable. That's the topic for that. I was looking at some notes. Good. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you saw this, but I posted a thread. Again, follow me on Threads. asking for podcast topics because I knew we were going to be recording again.
Yeah.
Someone had a funny comment. It was like, turn it into a true crime podcast. But on that note,
did you hear about the person in Alabama, the girl in Alabama?
No.
Right. So I'll let you talk about the murder mystery. And then by the time this airs, more action might be happening with this girl in Alabama. But anyways, go ahead. And then I'll talk about that.
I can't wait to hear about that. No, did the Gilgo Beach murders? Have you heard of that at all?
Dude, so I looked, because I saw you mention that, I went and looked it up. And it looks like some guy who's like a, you know, he was like a lawyer or something. He was like a normal person.
Yeah.
But I don't know anything else about it.
Well, it was a big deal on Long Island. So that's why I remember it. That's why like Ariel remembers it. It was a huge deal because they found like a bunch of bodies like abandoned on this like pretty, you know, I don't want to say abandoned, but like a part of the beaches on Long Island that don't get a lot of action. And it was crazy because they found like, I think it was like four bodies and like the body of a toddler. And like, man, it was fucked up. And the case went cold for like a bunch of years. And then recently they found, or they arrested a person who they found. And it was just crazy because they ended up following this guy and grabbing a pizza box that he threw out and using that to test the DNA. And that matched to something that they had found on one of the victims or something. And that's how they ended up arresting him. So
it was like 20 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 20 years later, like went cold for a really, really long time. And they ended up finding this guy. So pretty crazy. Yeah. I mean, anyone that was out on Long Island during that time remembers, cause it was like a huge, huge deal.
Bro. So if you haven't looked this up, and again, by the time this releases, I don't know if more information will be cut, but the woman's name is Carly Russell. And she basically, there's a 911 call where she says that she sees a toddler walking on like an interstate. And so you haven't heard of any of this? You haven't heard this?
No.
Dude. So she's the 911 call. She's like, hey, there's a toddler. And it already starts off weird because she's in her car making the call. And like the 911 dispatcher is like asking her questions, but yet she's saying, oh, the baby's kind of far away from me. It's like, bro, if you saw a toddler walking on the interstate, wouldn't you go out there and go like, first go get the baby, then call 911? Wouldn't you, like, I mean, I don't know. That's what I would do.
No, 100%.
So she's talking and she's like, well, I'm watching the baby. Like, it's just, she's in her car, like observing this baby. And so a bunch of stuff just didn't add up because basically she calls 911. Then she's on the phone with like her sister-in-law, and her sister-in-law says she hears a scream and a scuffle, and then she goes disappearing. So 911 dispatch goes out there. The police go out there. They can't find her. They can't find the toddler. But they find, like, I guess her Wii or her, like her fake hair and her car with the door open, still on the side of the interstate. And so it catches national news because it's just kind of weird. Like, you know, this girl goes out, she looks for the toddler, then she got kidnapped. It just seemed super odd. So sure enough, 2 days later, she shows up at her mom's house and she just is like like she can't function, whatever. And she doesn't want to talk to the police. Well, now there's a bunch of stuff that's came out. She, on the time she was on the call with the 911 dispatcher, they basically were able to utilize her phone and some GPS coordinates that she went the distance of like 6 football fields while she was on the phone call. So the toddler would have had to been running at the pace of like an Olympic sprinter to keep up with the distance that she was traveling while she was on the call, which is odd. Then her search engine showed that she had looked up the movie Taken. She had also looked up, does it cost any money to have an Amber Alert? And she looked up, how do you steal money from a cash register without like showing anybody's, like, all these weird things, right? So now what she's saying is that she was kidnapped by some guy and a girl, and like the girl played with her hair, and like she made up like this story, and the detectives don't believe it. And so in the next couple of days, I don't know what's going to happen, but maybe more information will come out, because basically they're saying that she made this whole, she fabricated this entire story up just to get, I guess, attention. I don't know.
Needless to say, I don't think the future of this podcast is going to be true crime, but we tried it.
But
do you ever, have you ever listened to like a good true crime podcast? They do such a good job. And I think it's,
is Serial a true crime podcast?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. That was pretty entertaining.
That was super good. Super good. Yeah. I think it's impressive how good of a job those podcasts do at, like, you know, how they splice in, like, you know, real police audio and like, you know, like the call that came in and stuff like that. Anyway, I don't think it's the direction we're going to go, but that's interesting. I'm going to follow up that story.
So yeah, just stay tuned for that one. I did want to say, I mean, I got a bunch of things that I think, one of the things I undervalued was watching the way that your kids watch the way that you react to certain situations. Like, we had some stuff go wrong in Europe for sure. Our friends were supposed to come out and meet us for a week, and their flight, basically they were in Philly and their flight got canceled. They couldn't get out. So we had to go tell our kids that their friends weren't coming. That was tough. Right. Then the flight that we were supposed to get out of Sicily, the airport caught on fire. And so our flight was canceled because the airport was on fire. And dude, and then we had to drive 6 hours, and then we missed the train, and then just a lot of adversity. Right. And if you're not freaking out, they're not freaking out. And it's just, it's, I undervalued how traveling with the kids at this age, how actually in a good way, it shows them that like you're exposed, right? You're in the middle of nowhere. People don't speak English. Like, you're exposed, and how can you adapt? And how can you, you know, one of the things I was talking to Ava about is like, I was carrying her bag a lot, because she's at this point where she lacks awareness of what's going on around her. And I was really trying to use it as a learning lesson for her. Like, look, dude, you're 12 years old. You're going to try and go out and go do things in a couple of years, like on your own. You got to have awareness. Like, we're at a train station. There's people around. Like, you can't just be knocking into people. You can't be aloof to your surroundings. So I want you to be like super hyper vigilant on and focused. And as a protector, as what we talk about, like, dude, trying to teach those lessons to my kids while being overseas was super valuable, because people can't speak English. There was a language, and there was just a lot of people around. So I found that to be one added benefit traveling that I hadn't thought about before leaving from the United States at this age that they're at, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I love what you said, right? Like, if what was it? Like, if you don't overreact, they don't overreact.
Yeah.
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 They're sponges, man.
Bro. Dude, we get out of this taxi, and we had our train was like in a few minutes. We got this taxi. I look up on the GPS. I'm like, Ashley, I think we're faster if we run. That's what I told her. And because there was so much traffic, she's like, I agree with you. So we get out of this taxi and we start running with our bags, and we're running. We get to the train. Dude, they shut off registration 2 minutes before we got there. And it was just one of those moments where I could have just thrown the bag down, freaked out, yelled, which I'm not that guy anyways, but that wouldn't have helped the situation. Like, it just wouldn't have done anything for us. So instead, I think what we're trying to instill in the kids, and something Ash and I talk about often, is like, how can they see us in those moments? And then how can we instead like do something that's actually going to help the situation, which is, you know, we got to get on the train. We got to get there. Me screaming and yelling and dropping my bag is not going to do shit. So we might as well, you know what I mean? That was an example.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Got to lead by example. It's a big deal, dude. And being able to, Jocko talks about like a lot about this, you know, being able to control your emotions.
Yeah.
Not necessarily not have emotions, but control your emotions. And I think that that's super important, specifically for, you know, the dad, I think. You know, I think it's a really, really big deal.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that, you know, mom can just go and absolutely lose it. I think obviously the responsibility falls on both, but, you know, it kind of like starts with dad, and they're like, if dad is losing it, then like all bets are off. So it is important, super important.
Yeah. And your kids pick up on that, you know, and I've been told like, you know, they could see the way you react to things. And I think that from a temper perspective, you know, I think that you got to check yourself, man. If you find yourself that you have kind of like a short fuse in your temper, like you got to know as a dad, that'll probably carry over to my kids. So you should probably get that, you know, that's something I remind myself of regularly. Like the way I am is going to resonate onto them and then onto their kids and onto their kids. So we should be trying to do everything we can to be as level-headed as possible. Obviously, you know, no one's perfect, but I think just being aware of that, I think is really important. And then being in these situations, just being in those stress test situations, I mean, just give you opportunities to either earn that kind of leadership capital with them or take it away. And I think for us, like overall, we added to it on this particular trip, which was cool to see, you know?
Yeah.
Do you drive stick shift, by the way?
No, never learned.
Yeah. That's something else. Like, that was an unknown benefit of our trip that was cool is that, you know, we were renting cars and they were all stick shift. And it was cool that I was able to, it opened my eyes to something I hadn't thought about with Caden or Ava, which is like, I believe they should have the capacity, like, just like I believe I should have the capacity to protect myself, protect other ones and do all daily tasks. Like that was an example of something where if I didn't have that skill set, we wouldn't have been able to rent a car. So it was a good eye-opening experience that when my kids are ready, even though stick shift is or manual cars are not as popular here in the United States, like that should be something that we should be educating them on to help them be as prepared as possible for the future. And having a stick shift vehicle there, it was cool to be able to say, hey, this is what I'm doing now. This is that we can use as a learning lesson. So those are just a few of the takeaways we have while overseas.
Yeah, we had a time overall.
Yeah, dude. I mean, bro, come on. I mean, having the family out there, I should send you some videos of my dad. My dad, he tried to drink vodka and then spit it onto a lighter to like, you know, like blow fire. Dude, I will send you this video. It is like the epitome of like basically like using a fire extinguisher to put it out, you know? It was great. So yes, we had a great time being the family. Everybody celebrated Ava being cancer free. It was perfect. But I'll send you that video. What was the
that was the
question you had asked was the true crime thing. That's what you're gonna ask about.
Yes.
Okay, well, we're not going to be a true crime podcast. We're gonna
talk about
hard work and that kind of stuff.
The true crime podcast is short lived.
I sent you a video. Did you watch that video I sent you of pulling the police car?
Yes. You've told me that story, and I've seen that video. And okay, it's a good story though. You should tell it.
Well, no, I hadn't seen this video for like 10 years or maybe, okay, that was an exaggeration. I've seen
my favorite part of the story
is John,
if I remember it correctly, is what Neil Maddox. Oh, Greg Maddox is a baseball pitcher. What Neil Maddox said to the girl when she finally came back home. That was my favorite part of the story. I think you should tell the story.
Dude, so me, Pat Barber, Taz, and Cheryl, we go compete in this sack count throwdown.
Neil Maddox, what a savage.
Dude, and we go compete, and the event was run around a track pulling a police car.
It's like
in
idea.
Theory, it's like, dude, that's sick, bro. We're gonna pull a police car around a track. Like, let's go. And so basically, you know, like Pat and I and the entire team, by the way, but particularly Pat and I are having a conversation. We're like, dude, how are we gonna win? Like that dude, he's a competitor for sure. And so we wanted to win. And so we're saying, okay, let's see how we can wrap this rope around our bodies as effectively so we could use our arms to create more momentum as we pull this police car around the track. And so all four of us tie the rope in a way where basically it can't come off our body.
Red flag number one.
Looking back on it, what were we thinking? Like, what were we thinking? Like, yeah. You were locking yourself into a rope. Now, there was a driver in the car who was in control of the brake. We should just note that. And was steering, but wasn't doing anything else. So 3-2-1 go happens. And me, Pat, Taz, and Cheryl were running. And, you know, as objects do, once they get in motion, they stay in motion. So like getting it started was the hardest part. But then once we got it going, it was moving. Like this car was going, I don't know, 10 miles an hour, whatever it was. Probably not 10 miles an hour, but it was moving. And so we're going around this NASCAR track and we get to the final corner and I look at Pat and he looks at me again. Pat's a competitor. And we're like, bro, let's turn it on. And so we turn it on And at the time watching the videos, there's a GoPro video that overlooks the four of us running. What I didn't realize at the time was Pat and I were doing a lot of like the pulling. Taz was crushing it. She was doing great. I actually think she was pregnant at the time, which was pretty gnarly. And Cheryl was kind of having a harder time keeping up running. And so we hit this corner and we're like, bro, let's turn it up. And so we speed up and we're going at it and we want to win. And dude, we're probably, I don't know, what do you think? Based on the video, like 100 feet from the finish, maybe.
It's pretty close.
100 feet. And all of a sudden the brake hits, boom. And Pat and I watched the video, so I'm a little bit dramatic here, but I felt like I just got lit up and laid on my back. In the video, I just get laid out and then I don't actually fall on the floor. But the look on our faces, like, what the hell just happened? Like, we were running at full speed and got the brakes turned on us as hard as possible. Looking back at the video now, what happened was, is as we're running, one of our teammates, their rope goes underneath the car. So what happens is we're running ahead. The individual was running. So Cheryl was running and the car, basically the car was passing her up. And so her rope got pulled underneath the tire and got tangled and pulled her into the wheel well. And bro, I'm telling you, if you watch this video, it is terrifying because the driver in the car, obviously, you know, he stopped it at the right time, or maybe he should have stopped it before. I don't know, but I'm so grateful nobody got hurt, man, because that's just one of those examples where on the surface, it sounded like a cool event. Like, oh, let's go out there. Let's go pull a police car around a racetrack. And then it was like, all right, let's put the rope around our body because we're going to be faster. Everything sounded great. And until that happened, dude, and she got lit up. And Pat and I, we ended up doing that event again because I felt strongly that we wanted to finish that race. And so we get back home and, you know, I was really like, I was trying to be empathetic to Cheryl. And it's something I've had to work on over the years. Like, I just wanted to win, right? But I was, you know, I didn't really say much. I was kind of like, hey, are you okay? Blah, blah. We get back home, it's like a week later, and Neil Maddox, we're at training. I'll never forget this forever. We're at training, and this is like, we're getting after it. And like, no, like, hey, are you okay? Or, you know, whatever. Just like, girl, you got to run. That was it. And like we got to get, like, girl, you got to run. And then just went back to training. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, dude, Neil's a savage, bro. Neil is savage. Neil Maddox kicked
You need
our
that
ass.
In your corner, though. What, you that? Absolutely need that in your corner, though.
Oh, dude.
You need that guy. You need the guy that's just going to be like, hey, you got to run.
Dude, Neil Maddox is straight up, dude, he is one of the toughest guys I've ever been around, man. Strongest, fittest. Dude, I got nothing but love and good things to say about him. But when he said, girl, you got to run, it just like, I don't know if we laughed. I don't know what we said, but it was just the way he said it and like the emotion behind it, you know, because he cared for her. It just was like, you know, that was his love language right there, I guess.
Yeah, that was the practical solution for that not happening again. It's not don't do it again. It's, hey, next time be in better shape so you can keep up with the car.
In the podcast show notes, we will go ahead and add the link to the YouTube video if you want some entertainment. I am so happy that Cheryl was okay. And it was a learning lesson. I'm sure they never did that event ever again. And they probably will never do that event ever again in the CrossFit Games or at any CrossFit competition. So speaking of which, when this releases, the CrossFit Games will be coming up. I will actually be announcing there. So make sure you guys stay tuned on, you know, all the CrossFit channels, TV channels, everything. Cause I'll be announcing on.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun, man. I'm excited to see you on the ESPN, the Ocho.
I don't know if it's going to be on the Ocho, but it's going to be on it might be, but yeah, man, just a couple of good stories today, dude. I really enjoy these conversations. I really appreciate people listening to this podcast. You know, it's just stories about my life, stories about Gabe's life. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's, we just riff on different stuff, man. You know, next week I got some things I want to talk about, but I think for today, like,
follow me on Threads. That's it.
Follow Gabe Yanez on Threads. And follow at Jason Kipa on Instagram and Threads. Just appreciate all you guys. Make sure to go check out the podcast show notes. Join our weekly newsletter, our EOE newsletter. Gabe does a really, really good job on that. Really inspirational, giving tactical things you could do on a weekly basis to level up your game. You know, if you're a dad out there, man, I'm really about this. And I've been about this for a long time, but Gabe and I have been talking about it more. Just I need to do a better job of being more vocal about the way that I feel about being a dad and about being a protector, being this guy who I want to be. I put this out on Threads. Like, I want to be the toughest, fittest, most capable guy in the room. And I really mean that. Like, that's my goal. And I think that should be your goal as well. I think you should try and be the toughest, fittest, most capable guy in the room. And that includes self-defense. That includes overall fitness. That includes all of these skill sets. And you know, we're going to start sharing more and more about that message, because I think that right now it's just gotten diluted over the years. And I think that people have a false impression of what we're talking about. We're just talking about trying to just be a badass. And it doesn't mean you can't be loving and caring and compassionate. You want to be that too. But you also want to be able to stand up for yourself, stand up for your family, protect yourself, and never allow fitness to inhibit what you want to do. So that's what we're about here at NC Fit. I know I am. I know Gabe is too.
Right. Isn't the saying is, it's better to be a warrior in the garden than a gardener at war, right? Like, you want to be able to do all those compassionate things and whatever, but you got to be a badass.
Dude. Yep. Like I said on Threads, I want to be the toughest, fittest, most capable person in the room. And that's not to say that I want everybody else in the room to be super tough, super fit, super capable. Like, I want us all to rise up. But what I don't want is, I don't want to see dads who can't, you know, have the energy to keep up with their kids. I don't want to see dads who, you know, fall trying to chase after their kid on a bike. I don't want to see that. I want to see us all level up, man. And that's the vision. That's the goal.
Right. No, I'm excited to get into that stuff more, man. I think it's a message people need more out there. And I'm excited to also live it as a dad now, because you can talk about it all you want, but you know, if we can live it and put that stuff out there, I think it's a lot more powerful.
All right. Well, everybody, I hope you have a great week. Keep kicking ass. And Gabe Giannis, thank you very much.
Yeah, dude.